Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All righty. Well, guess what, Lisa Wolf?
We're here, and actually, it's late, but it's early.
Yeah, because they first told us that we were going to be on at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So we were driving, because we carpool, so we were driving, taking our time driving to the station. Then Shante Garth, our Cracker Jack producer, gave us a call while we were chit-chatting on our way to the radio station, saying, hey, you guys are on at 12:30, not 1.
And it was about 12:10.
Yeah.
I think when she called and here's Carl. Oh, we'll be there.
So guess what?
We're here.
I put the pedal to the metal, as they say.
Yeah, you know here. How much I enjoyed that.
Yeah, Lisa was like, there's a car, there's this, but oh, you're
I was holding
you're,
on
you
with
are,
both hands.
You're really bad at being a passenger. Horrible.
Yeah, that's true.
Horrible passenger.
I can't argue with that.
But this is program 302 in the series. It is, it's July 22nd now. It was supposed to be July 21st, but it is, it's actually Sunday morning already.
Yes,
wow,
we got
kinda,
that right.
Kind of weird. We are going to be listening to Suspense, a really great broadcast of Suspense from 1947, starring Edmund O'Brien. We also have some other fun little things for you, too, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We're also going to play our songs, right?
Yes, yes.
You picked a song out for me?
I did. So we've been doing a new little thing for the last couple of weeks where we choose a song for each other that we feel best represents each other. And we Roger's in on this, too. Hey, Roger.
What's Hi, up, guys. Roger? How you
so,
doing?
I got a nice song for
you?
Roger. I think it's very apropos.
Oh, okay.
And a song for you, Carl, that I think really sums you up.
All right. Well, we'll get into the songs in just a few minutes, and then we will have Suspense for you in about 20 minutes. We'll start Suspense.
And just to let everybody know, stay tuned, because at the top of the hour, shortly thereafter, we will be giving away a pair of tickets to see Avenue Q at Mercury Theater Chicago for our Crack the Quote.
You know what? I saw Avenue Q in New York on Broadway.
And
Lisa doesn't think I go to Broadway shows
Not
or anything.
Not too often.
But someone, I'm trying to think, it was years ago, and it was really
it was
good.
Before I knew you.
It was really, really good. No, it wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so quite a bit coming your way. Unfortunately, we are not going to be playing The Green Hornet or Four Star Playhouse. We'll put those shows back on the shelf. And we'll bring them back out to play for you at a different time. But right now, I thought because baseball preempted us, and Roger, you're going to love this too.
Okay.
Baseball preempted us,
mm-hmm.
So I thought we'd play the most famous baseball routine of
yes.
all time.
Roger's jumping in his seat.
I'm so happy.
Yeah. Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, here is the entire routine. It's about 8 minutes long. The Who's on First.
Here we are. Here we are. Here we are at Nashville.
Nashville?
Nash, what I want to tell you.
Now, wait a minute. Take it easy. Are you talking about the Calvinator 9?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. I understand the Calvinator 9 is going to have a baseball team this year.
That's right.
I understand that Nash made you the manager.
Well, certainly. Naturally.
I want to play ball.
Well, there's no reason why
I want to be a ball player on your team.
Well, why not?
Well, you know all the guys' names. I don't know any of them. I would like to know some of the guys' names on the team so when you meet them on the street or in the ballpark.
But you know... You know, Lou, strange as it may seem, they give these ball players nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Nicknames, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
Yeah, and his brother, Daffy.
Daffy Dean.
I'm their cousin.
Who are you?
Goofy.
Goofy, yeah. Well, let's
I'm
see.
Their French cousin.
Yes?
Goofy.
Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have Who's on First, Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know's on third.
What's... That's what I want to find out.
What strange names. I say, who's on first? What's on second? I don't know's on third.
You're the manager?
Yes.
You know the guy's name?
I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
Go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
I'm telling you who is on
first. Go ahead and tell me.
That's his name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
I can't tell you any more than that.
I'm asking you who's playing first base.
He is.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who is on first?
Have you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
When you signed up the first baseman, who signed the contract?
Well, naturally.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, it's no good unless he signs it.
No good unless who signs it?
Yes.
So who signs it?
He did.
Who did?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the guy's name on first that signed
it? What is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
No, who's on first?
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
When he signs the receipt, how does he sign the receipt?
Who?
The guy that...
Who? Yes.
I mean, how does he sign the...
Who?
The guy on first.
That's all he signs.
You give the guy the money?
Yes.
You know who signs the receipt?
He does.
How does he sign it?
Who?
The guy you give the money
to. That's the way he signs it.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
But what is the guy's name on second
base? I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. What are you talking about?
How did I get on third base?
You mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is on third?
Who is playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third.
Look, when you pay off the third baseman every month, how does he sign his name?
I don't know.
You don't know how the guy signs his name?
Certainly I do.
You give him the money?
I give him the money.
How does he sign his name?
I don't know.
And still you give him the money?
Well, he's entitled to it.
Who's entitled to it?
Oh, who's entitled to his own money?
What's entitled to his own money?
What's entitled to his?
I don't know. He's on third. Hey, you got an outfield?
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask you.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Now tell me, who's playing left field?
Who is playing first?
I'm not asking you what's on first.
What's on second?
I don't know. Third base. And the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field.
He's in center field.
You know this place as well as I do.
You got a pitcher on a team?
Wouldn't this be a fine team without a pitcher?
The pitcher's name?
Tomorrow.
Don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you, man.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow are you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen, who is not pitching?
I'll break your arm, you say, who's on first.
Go ahead, have it your own.
I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know. Third base. You got a catcher?
Sure.
Catcher's name?
Today.
Today, and tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
All we got is a couple of days on the team.
I can't help that.
You know, I'm a catcher, too.
So they do?
I'll get behind the plate and do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and a heavy hitter gets up.
Yes.
Home run Levy.
Levy?
He works for Nash.
Yes, all right.
Levy gets up.
Yes.
Now, tomorrow throws the ball, and Levy bunts the ball.
Yes.
Now, when he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw Levy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
That's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
If I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up what I said.
You did not.
I said I throw the ball to naturally.
But you don't.
I throw it to who?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
Now, wait a minute. You throw the ball to first base.
Then who gets it?
Naturally.
Ball and naturally.
You don't.
I throw it a hole.
Naturally.
That's what I'm saying.
You're not saying it straight. Now get it straight.
Go ahead and ask me again.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's correct.
I ask you. I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Same as you.
No.
I throw the ball to naturally.
You throw the ball to who?
Then who gets it?
Naturally.
He better get it. I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball and the guy runs a second. That's Levy. Now, whoever it is, I throw the ball, and he picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to? I don't know. I don't know. Throws it back to tomorrow? Triple play.
Now, that could be.
Another guy gets up, and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third, and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said, I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
There is the most famous baseball routine and probably one of the most famous comedy routines of all time. What mic are you on there? Is that you, Roger? Hang on a second.
Mike, Roger, are you confused?
Try six.
You're on six?
Yeah.
Now, you probably heard that routine, Lisa also. You've probably heard that routine many, many, many times, right?
Yes, and slightly different variations.
We were just talking about that. So they did it on television. They did it in, you know, on their TV show. Of course, they did it many, many times on their radio show. And I was just telling Lisa, there is no way they were using a script.
No,
this is something that they had memorized so profoundly and so indulged into their minds, right, that they were able to go off on tangents.
Yeah.
Like that particular routine, I hadn't heard that. That was actually from a broadcast that had the Andrews sisters as guests. And that particular routine, I hadn't heard before, this particular one.
And actually, it's the check writing. On the ones that I've heard, he only deals with who.
Not right. Not it,
I don't know.
I don't know.
Or and what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just, it's amazing because this routine, I think they really started this routine in the early 40s, in the early 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
They ran with this all the way into the 50s on television, late 50s. And it was always super, super popular. Of course, it's the only non-baseball player to be inducted in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It is in the Hall of Fame.
And how amazing that it still stands up today so well.
It's up perfectly.
Really?
I don't know if I've ever mentioned it to you, but you do know that when I was teaching broadcasting in high school, I taught the history of broadcasting. And, of course, the golden age of radio we always had to deal with. And I taught them how to actually produce their own radio, half-hour radio program. And the interest of the students wasn't really there at the beginning until I played this. I would play this and says,
and
here, because it's short.
They get it, yeah.
It's short. And I played it as an example. Here's something. Here was the entertainment on radio before there was TV, before there were computers, before there were
iPhones.
There was anything. Anything. It was just radio and movies. And about halfway into the bit, all of a sudden, some in the back are going,
they're laughing.
They start to laugh. By the end of the routine, everyone is laughing because they got it.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
You know what, Roger? Carl and I have had a few lectures that we've done at a few different organizations. One of them is various Rotary organizations.
She doesn't even get a word in, though, when we're at
I just do the whole thing. He just stands there and doesn't speak. And we've talked at some high schools and done some various arts events. And what we do is play this as an introduction, whether it's to students, like you're talking about, or even to young adults who may not, you know, have the exposure or the knowledge. And it's just such an icebreaker.
It is.
And it's such a way to get everybody on the same page. And everybody can appreciate that, I really think.
You actually can see like a switch going off in their mind about halfway into it. People that have never heard classic radio, you play this, and all of a sudden, their head goes like this. You know, click.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah,
and
Oh,
that's what radio drama, that's what the theater of the mind is, right?
And they get it. And it's so corny that because the insistent repetition of it back and forth and how one just, you're sitting there go, this guy's not getting it.
Yeah.
What is wrong with him?
And then you have the movie that comes out. What movie was it with Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise, right? Where Dustin Hoffman, Rayman. And he's doing this routine.
Right.
Dustin Hoffman.
Yes.
And he's doing it really accurately.
Yeah.
I remember watching the movie and saying, hey, he's who's on first, what's on second, I don't know, what's on third. And then he throws the ball to first base and who's there? And he's doing the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's
so
amazing. That's part of
that tells you how popular this routine is. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to play our songs that we've picked out for each other. And then we'll have Crack the Quote, then Suspense. So stick around, everyone. It's baseball, Roger.
I don't play
softball. I play baseball.
He's in the 65 and over. He's got the 65-plus league.
Oh, really?
We were talking about baseball here, and I played today.
Okay.
And I'm playing at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Well, that's good for you.
Go home, sleep a couple of hours, get up, go play baseball.
That's good.
And then go home and sleep.
And then you'll come right back here.
That's because he is old.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Look at that. Look at us. If our audience could see him now.
All right. So this is the WGN Radio Theater. We're normally here on Saturday nights from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. And then Sunday nights we're here from 11 to 1 a.m. So 5 hours of your favorite classic radio shows. However, the Sox, who won.
Yeah,
who
won, 5-1. Or 5-0. Yeah.
Five zip.
Yeah.
We're playing in Seattle.
Yes.
Is that where they were?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got preempted a little bit. But we're here now, and we'll be here till 2 a.m. We have an episode of Suspense starring Edmund O'Brien coming your way. Remember the film DOA?
Yes.
Edmund O'Brien. Mm-hmm. Probably his most famous movie, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, because he was the star of that movie.
Right.
And for a while, he played yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Did really?
Yeah,
nope,
for a while, he was Johnny Dollar before Bob Bailey.
Okay.
All right, so last couple weeks, we have been picking out songs for each other. Should we start with Roger's song?
Yeah, that would be great.
All right, so we picked out a song for Roger. Here you go, Roger Badish.
Do you know this? It's Kelly Clarkson.
I have no idea what this song is.
You've never heard this song?
Never heard Mr. Know-It-All from Kelly Clarkson?
Mr. Know-It-All?
Never.
Where have you been under a rock?
I don't listen to Kelly Clarkson.
That's a mistake.
You don't listen to Kelly Clarkson? She rocks.
Ever since American
Idol.
America, thank you. Wait, am I being laughed at behind my back?
No.
This is perfect for you. I mean, you do know it all. I mean, you pretty
don't
much
know
pretty
all.
Much
you do
pretty much every
but
subject.
That, you know what?
Let's
we're
put it this way.
You can talk on.
Let's put it this way. I have forgotten more than I know now.
I will tell you that this is actually a compliment.
Blood thing.
Because
I know it is.
Because
thank
just
you.
So we're clear, that what I always say about Roger, and this is true, that no matter what we're talking about, Roger can add something intelligent to the conversation. We could be talking about that time that we visited Mars, and Roger would go, yes, I was there, and this is what I found that day. And I will share that story with you.
You have taken that trip with Lisa to her hometown?
I was waiting for her up there. I was already up there. I had the concession stand.
But it's a compliment. You do know something thank about you. Everything, and I mean that in a kind way.
I know you do. Okay. I know, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Now I got to start listening to Kelly Clarkson.
She's great. She
well,
is.
Like I said, after she won American Idol.
That was 10 years ago or something.
Yeah. And
was
she
the first winner
no.
of American Idol?
No.
No.
I don't think she was.
She was early on.
Oh,
though.
I think it was a guy. The guy with the gray
Justin.
Hair.
Justin.
The guy with the gray hair.
Marino or something?
Yeah, with the curly hair.
Curly hair. It was blonde.
Oh, was it?
Gray.
Yeah.
He was young.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I think maybe she
Are
was
sure?
after that.
Yeah,
Justin
second year,
Guarino so. Or something?
Yeah.
Really?
I think he won. Yeah.
Was a guy that won first?
Yeah.
I think so.
Hmm.
And then she won the second year. I think so.
All right, so here's Lisa's song. I chose this. I think this really sums you up pretty well, Lisa.
All right,
here,
great.
Here you go.
You're a rich girl, and you're gone too far.
I love this song.
You know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far. Cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
Oh, Lisa.
You know what, Carl? Good job.
Yeah.
You know what? And I actually really love this song. So
I had
okay
no help
that.
Picking this song out at all.
You usually need help.
I usually have a whole staff of people to help me do things.
But I couldn't help you this time.
But this is you.
Fantastic.
This is you. And you like the song, and you could rely on the old man's money.
Yeah.
Not that your dad's old. He's not old. But
well, he's going to be 83.
That's not old.
No.
Well, he's still young.
But your dad's done well for himself. And I'm hoping that I am going to get the adoption papers.
Well,
some
you know
point
what?
Soon.
My parents are having a 60th wedding anniversary this November.
Wow!
So we're going to have a big celebration.
Where are you getting them from?
You know, I think Lisa's dad likes me. I do. I think he likes me. I think he would adopt me.
That.
I think he would adopt me.
Yeah, and then he'd cut you out of the will.
Probably.
All right, well, we have one more song that, so far, so good here.
So far, right on the money, right?
Guys,
gosh.
Yes.
We have one more, and this
right
would be
on the, money.
The song that I chose for Carl, and I'm pretty sure it is right on.
All right, here we go.
Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. When I walk in the spot, this is what I see. Everybody stops and is staring at me. I got passion in my pants and I ain't afraid to show it. Show it, show it, show it. I'm sexy and I know it.
Oh, yeah. You could not have picked a better song. Wow.
I know.
Isn't that his entrance music when he comes in the studio?
Every day.
I
he
know.
Waits for that. Shantae plays that as we... I open the door for him and she plays that music. And
that's
he's dropped
right.
in.
Yeah? And we kind of got the disco lights. No, the disco lights flash on and off.
Oh.
Yeah.
We'll
you
have
know,
to do
you've
that.
Missed that part.
I've always said this my whole life. My motto is, when you got it, you got it.
Yeah. His motto is, I'm sexy and I know it.
Yeah.
So there
I mean,
you have
right?
it.
You got it, why hide it?
Yeah,
right?
I had it once and I got rid of it because it was too much.
I don't blame you.
You could take antibiotics for it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So is it gone, Roger? It's gone.
Well, Lisa, great job.
Thanks, Carl. I felt good about
Roger
that choice.
Lisa picked Roger's song, too,
yeah,
so I did
job.
Not help Lisa with that.
Very good job.
Great job, nice. You guys. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will be tuning into Suspense. Stick around. You know, this is a very, very special day for me, Lisa.
Why, Carl?
Because I was right,
yes,
and you were wrong.
You were right.
Something. This is the first time since we've known each other. Which has been 10 years.
Well, I just took the cue from Roger.
So I said that Kelly Clarkson was the first winner of American Idol.
I think we were.
And you guys both said she was not.
I think so.
Well, and our listeners who know it all.
Of course.
They're definitely
Roger,
know it all.
I just
they actually
you, Mr.
You know why we thought? Because
you know
they
what?
Were the two finalists.
Yes, they were. It was,
remember?
It was
and
the
everyone
two of them.
Thought
just, yes.
He was the better singer at the time.
Well, they were wrong.
Well, there you go.
But Roger, here's the thing. What? I just called you Mr. No. It all. I said that in a loving way because you are so intelligent and know something about everything, and there you let me down.
No, I was just agreeing with you.
I was agreeing with you.
I mean, out of the three, hang on, here's the crazy thing. Out of the three of us, I was the one that was right.
That is crazy.
That is
very crazy.
You know what? There's moons are all
out of alignment. Yeah.
Something's not working
not
out.
Not aligned.
Right.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you, Roger. It is 1:07 in the morning, and in this hour, we will play a terrific tale well calculated to keep you in suspense from 1947, starring Edmund O'Brien. That is coming your way. But right now, it's time to play our game, Lisa. Crack the quote. What's the movie?
The movie is The Life of Brian.
Life of Brian.
Yeah, from 1979.
Oh, wow. It's going way back there, huh?
Well, not, you know, way back.
Gosh, 79, yeah.
Right.
All right. So that was a very good year, 1979.
Good. What was good about it?
Well, I'm trying to think now. I was in high school.
Okay, so that's
and
good.
I liked high school a lot.
Good.
I liked it a lot. Then when I get into college... Studied to be an astronaut.
Really?
You know all about that, right?
No, I don't. Tell me.
Studied to be an astronaut, Roger.
Tell me.
I took up space. Okay. Thank you. All right.
Awkward
so, all right. So the movie is The Life of Brian.
Monty Python.
And what do they win?
They are going to win two tickets to see Avenue Q.
Yeah, you're going to like that.
It's a great show. It's playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago. Great theater, great show.
Very good. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the fifth caller, play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. brought to you by Cat's Pride.
I'm going broke with this 10 cents every time.
Good.
Still waiting for the check.
Roger, yes, Roger's waiting with his hands
in the mail.
Out. He's sitting on the street. He's got no money because you don't pay him. So we've got Donald on the phone. Hey, Donald.
Hi.
How are you?
No, fine. I always wanted to see this, actually, because it beat out Wicked.
Oh,
for the
I'm
best,
so
best musical.
I'm so glad. I'm a Wicked fan, so
you're Wicked, all right.
I don't know if I agree with that, but this is a great.
Well, it must have been cheaper with the puppets. You know, you don't, they have, probably have, don't have as good contract.
You know what? It is very unique. And
Lisa
it is
likes
not,
puppets.
No, this is not aimed at a child. I mean, this is a very adult show. So in any event, Life of Brian, we'll see what we can do here. You ready, guys? Roger, you listening?
Yep.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Quote number one, follow me if I advance, kill me if I retreat. Number two, lead me, follow me, or get out of my way. Number three, you don't need to follow me. You don't need to follow anybody.
What do you think, Donald?
I like one.
I like one.
Yeah.
All right. Roger, what do you think?
Three.
Three?
I like, I'm going with Donald.
Number one?
Yep.
All right. Let's hear it.
You don't need to follow me. You don't need to follow anybody.
Roger, you are a know-it-all tonight.
Well, I've seen the movie.
That's okay, because you know what? You still get to go see Avenue Q. It is the puppet-filled comedy musical. It follows a group of 20-somethings making their way in the big city. It is playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago. Check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com.
I always knew the Muppets had some nasty cousins.
That's right. They all have personalities, and they have a lot to say. But Mercury Theater does a great job over there, and so I know that you're going to love it. So enjoy the show.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thanks,
glad
Donald.
You called in.
All right. He's a big winner. He won some tickets. Avenue Q. Very cool play.
Very funny show.
And they do great things at Mercury Theater.
Always.
Really good over there. All right. Time now for Suspense. This is a good one. This stars Edmund O'Brien in the Argyle album. It's from September 4th, 1947. Here is part one now of Suspense.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A. Roma Wines, for your everyday enjoyment.
And now, Roma Wines of Fresno, California, bring you Mr. Edmund O'Brien in the Argyle album. A suspense play produced, edited, and directed by William Spear.
Back when I got my first job in the Herald, Alan Pierce was its star reporter. A little later, he went to Washington and became top dog of all syndicated political columnists. Pierce could tell you what the president said when he didn't like his breakfast and who was getting paid off for what, by whom, and how much. He was a national big shot, so naturally his coming back to the hometown last January got local front page. Especially since the first thing happens, he checks into the Belden General Hospital from a heart attack he had on the train right as it pulled into the station. Quite an entrance. And time? Well, maybe you remember. Just when 22 million anxious readers were waiting for his promised expose of the contents of the Argyle album, the thing he'd been building up in his columns for about 2 weeks before. Teapot Dome was going to be a church club misunderstanding compared to this. Naturally, all the boys hung around the anteroom of his hospital suite during visiting hours, but nobody from the press cracked the door to the sick room for the first 3 days. Then, on the fourth morning, Van Selden, the doctor, came smiling out into the anteroom.
Good morning, gentlemen. Gentlemen. Mr. Pierce would have willingly seen you all the first day. Of course, as his medical advisor, I couldn't permit anything of the sort. However, today I'll allow you to see him one at a time.
What's that? What's
I suggest that you gentlemen draw straws or something for turns. Oh, that is, except the man from the Herald.
Huh?
Mr. Pierce asked expressly to see him first.
Hey, the Herald man, that's me.
Is the Herald representative here?
Over here, Doctor.
Do you want to come in now?
Right with you, Doctor. Hey, Pinky, come here.
Yeah, Harry.
Listen, Dr. Van Selden, this is Mr. Melvin Pincus, the Herald's best and believe me, quietest photographer. Now, he's very good for patients. I wonder.
I'm afraid not, Mr. Mitchell.
Okay, Doc. Okay. Stand by, Pinky.
Right. Nurse, let this gentleman in. I'll be on the fifth floor.
Very well. Yeah.
Hello there.
How are you, sir?
You're Harry Mitchell, aren't you?
That's right, Mr. Pierce.
Come on, now, make it, Al.
All right, Al.
So you're young Mitchell.
Uh-huh.
How time flies. I spoke to the old man on the phone. I said, send your next Alan Pierce over. And he sent you. Do you consider that a compliment?
Compliment, brother. I'm going to hit him for a nice fat raise.
Well, Harry, have you got your questions all written down like a good reporter should?
Oh, no, I don't work that way, sir.
Neither do I. I suppose you want to know what the Argyle album is?
Say, you're not really going to tell me.
Look, crank me up a little bit, will you?
Yeah, sure.
Harry, it's got to a point where I think I ought to share it with somebody. Preferably somebody like myself who thinks like me. And I'm going to ask you not to use this unless I'm not in a position to.
Okay, it's a deal.
Well, you know what an album is. This one is quite a fancy-looking one. Tooled, white leather-bound, and a flaming crimson double-headed eagle crest etched on the cover. It's an impressive item.
Maybe you better take it easy, Mr. Pierce.
You were going to call me Al.
Okay, Al, but no, honest, maybe you better...
I'm all right. I'm a little dizzy.
Want the doctor?
No. Now just a drink. A drink of water, please.
He lay back on his pillow, breathing terribly. There was a thermos on the bedstand that turned out empty. I grabbed a glass and ran into the bathroom, filled it from the tap. I'll be right there, Al. Mr. Pierce. Al. Oh. I stood there for a while, feeling awfully bad and thinking awfully hard. Finally figured an idea.
Hey, Harry.
Pinky.
Harry, come on, what's going on?
There I am, General.
Where is he going to pose?
Yeah, he's going to pose. Come on in here.
What's going on?
Pinky.
Huh?
Pinky, look at him. He's dead.
Huh?
Passed out while we were talking. This is our beat. It's big. It's a scoop. I don't want those other tin horns out there cutting in.
What are you going to do?
I'm going out and phone. You stay here and don't let anybody in through that door.
Hey, you're not letting me alone with him.
An old hound like you, are you kidding?
I don't like it.
I went out to the pay station in the hall and phoned in the story. Then I found Dr. Van Selden on the fifth floor and broke the news. Between the fifth and seventh floor, where Pierce's suite was, we picked up the chief surgeon, superintendent, four nurses and litter bearers and attendants. We went through the anteroom where the reporters were.
Hey, come on.
The newspaper boys smelled something was up. Nobody'd left them in Pierce's room. But the official hospital gang and me barged in and headed straight for the bed where the corpse was. I got a funny feeling. Pinky wasn't in the room. Dr. Van Silben and the chief surgeon went over to the bed and pulled back the covers and... You could feel the shock go through the whole crowd. A long steel scalpel was sticking right up in the middle of Alan Pierce's chest. An hour later, Lieutenant Horslip Sampson, who was top man in homicide, strutted in and took over. He got the story from us and just sat there for a while, thinking, very professional, exuding brilliance. Then His Majesty rose and spoke.
Dr. Van Selden?
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, did your patient die from a heart attack, as our reporter friend here claims, or from the knife wound?
I really can't tell you yet. Indications are that it might be either. You see, in either case, the heart was stopped.
Yeah. The heart usually stops in cases of death, doesn't it, Doc, huh? The only thing is, I took his pulse before I left the room. There was no pulse. That scalpel could just as well have been stuck in a loaf of bread for all the damage it would
Mitchell! Why'd you leave a dead man unreported? Why'd you leave the photographer here without telling the noise?
I was a reporter with a scoop. Who'd you expect me to leave here? Somebody from the Express?
Noise, were you outside the door the whole time?
Yes, sir, with the reporters, and nobody came out except Mr. Mitchell. The photographer went in, but never came out.
Take a gander in the bathroom, Haggerty.
Yes, sir. And there's nobody here, Chief.
Magerson, those windows locked.
Yes, sir.
Locked room, Case Horslip. Should bring out your Scotland Yard training.
Mitchell, you're in too tough a spot to be fresh. If I could only get an angle. Must be an angle.
He got up, sore, and started looking around himself. He walked over to the white bed screen in the corner. It's funny, it stood there all the time, such a natural piece of hospital equipment. You never noticed it.
Gotta get an angle.
But even now, before
yeah,
he touched it, I knew what he'd find there.
Now, where am I
and I edged for the door.
Angle?
He started to pull aside the screen like somebody'd look hopelessly in any unlikely spot for a lost collar button. Then he let the screen fall over.
Holy shit!
And there was Pinky. Pinky, all huddled up among his photographic equipment with a surgeon's scalpel sticking out of his
neck. Hey, you, Mitchell! Mitchell! I get out of here!
I yelled to the reporters in the anteroom that they could go in now. The crowd coming out after me met the crowd going in, and I was in the corridor while they argued it out. I was around the corner and in the elevator before the cops could get through. I walked right through the Waldorf lobby and up to the second floor, and nobody said a thing. Time was still with me. I knew Pierce's secretary was keeping suite 213 for him till he was supposed to get out of the hospital.
One moment. Yes.
May I come in?
Well,
I'm a friend of Mr. Pierce's, Mitchell of the Herald.
Well, what is it, Mr. Mitchell? Something I can do?
Would you let me rifle your boss's desk, huh?
What?
Files, papers, and possessions. I'll put them back real neat. There's something I have to find.
Are you crazy?
I was afraid that'd be your answer.
What are you going to do?
I'm sorry.
Don't!
Really, yeah. I really was. I didn't like to hit a woman, especially that cute. I searched the suite top and bottom, but if Pierce had ever had the Argyle album, he took no chances keeping it around. I found his personal address book, though, and figured it was no more use to him than it might be to me. Now I needed a place where I could sit down and think. Then I remembered I was carrying a key for my pal Joe Walsh's apartment while he was sunning himself in Florida. Yeah, at least nobody could figure my going there. At Walsh's place, I spent about 20 minutes with Pierce's address book. He had Washington phone numbers in it that hadn't been in public directories for the last 30 years. But there was one in this town that had a red crayon circle around it. It was a query. Jor Brod. J-O-R-B-R-O-D on Worcester Street. Not the kind of neighborhood Alan Pierce usually socialized in. I was just about deciding I'd go and see Jor Brod when somebody decided to pay me a visit. I checked through the keyhole. I didn't see much, but what there was to see was female. So I took my chances and opened the door. She stood there, about 5'7" of the most interesting stuff I ever remember seeing. Not young, mind you, not angelic, but gorgeous and smart-looking and sweet-voiced.
Hello there.
Who are you?
May I come in?
Sure, it's your risk. Who are you?
You may call me Marla, Mr. Mitchell, and I want the Argyle album.
Just like that?
No, not just like that. I could be nasty, you know. After all, the police want you.
Somehow, Marla, that doesn't worry me at all. I just don't think you make it a policy to have traffic with the police.
An astute youngster. I like you.
I like you, too, but I haven't time.
I'll give you $500 for it.
I don't even know what it is. What is the Argyle album?
10,000.
Without a breath, huh? There's some jump.
10,000?
I'm really sorry, Marla.
That's what I wanted to know. It's not for sale. Very well.
She moved so casually and directly to the door and opened it so quickly, I hadn't even gotten out of my chair before her two boyfriends stepped in. The first one looked like a fat businessman, hair slightly gray, nice smile. The one who followed him had the square, low-cut, irresistible appearance of a medium-sized tank.
Mr. Winter, Mr. Holbury, Mr. Mitchell.
How do you do?
He's not terribly cooperative.
Oh, no?
He doesn't perform, not for love, nor for money. Very stubborn.
She really didn't try love, Mr. Winter.
From what I know of Marla, that's hard to believe. Hey, Marla? So you're stubborn, Mr. Mitchell, a stubborn murderer.
I'll repeat my question. What is the Argyle album?
My, you are a gifted actor.
Never mind. Forget it, Mr. Winter.
Well, isn't $10,000 enough? That's the best we can offer and still make a profit.
Let's not waste time.
Oh, I am sorry, my boy. I'm very sorry. Very well, Gil.
Yeah. The big guy stepped toward me. I ducked and took the table between us. Gil pushed it aside like it was matchwood. His left hand lashed out and had the lapels of my coat, and I was lifted until my shoe tips touched the floor, helpless as a baby. It started slapping my face, front hand and back. It kept up and up like a hot lick on the drums, and the agony was unbearable. He stopped. I waited. Like you wait between pauses of the dentist drill. Then I guess I tried to move because I saw the small eyes flicker and the huge fist come swinging at my face. I wanted to duck but couldn't. My hands were torn from in front of my face, and it came. Shocks of intolerable pain, like searing flames, and then the flame flickered and went out.
Hello?
suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Mr. Edmund O'Brien in the Argyle Album. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
That is the first portion of Suspense from 1947, Edmund O'Brien, starring in the Argyle Album. And, you know, the guy there announcing that that Suspense episode, his name was Joseph Kearns. And, you know, he was on so many radio shows, so many, especially the CBS shows. And he was Jack's vault guard on the Jack Benny program. On television, he played Mr. Wilson on the Dennis the Menace television show, but he was great at comedy. He did, as I say, he was Ed the Vault Guard. He was on all kinds of comedy shows, but he also was great at mystery, too, like in this episode of Suspense. And for a while, he played the Whistler. He was the Whistler on radio, and then he was the announcer on Suspense. Just tons and tons of stuff. And it's funny because these were like people that got up in the morning, went to work, and they went to CBS, KNX Studios in Los Angeles, and they would just all day long, Lisa, were just on radio show after radio show. This guy was as probably in as many shows as William Conrad, Hans Conried, Frank Nelson. These are the guys, you know, Raymond Burr did a lot of shows. These were the guys, Elliot Lewis, were probably the most versatile actors on the West Coast.
These were probably the few people that could actually make a living doing this.
They made a very good living doing it.
Only a very small amount of people, and even today, can actually make a living that way.
Yeah, yeah. And Joseph Kearns, definitely one of them. All right, we'll get back to Suspense in just a minute, but first, these words. All right, after the news, we'll come back and tune in to the conclusion to Suspense. And then, Lisa, what do we have on the agenda for tonight when we come back here? Do you know?
Don't have that.
You don't have
that? Because you know why? It's usually on our third sheet.
I think I have it.
Good.
Hang on a second. I'll tell you. We have the Cisco Kid.
Poncho.
Cisco. And you know what? Mel Blanc, who's another guy that made a living doing this.
Right.
Mel Blanc plays Poncho on that.
Yeah, you can check out our fun fact about that. It's posted on WGN Radio Theater Facebook page and the WGN Facebook page.
Yeah, we have the Cisco Kid. Then we're going to tune into Let George Do It, Good Detective Adventure, starring Bob Bailey as George Valentine on that. That's tonight when we come back here. We'll start things off right at 11 p.m. and we'll go to 1 a.m. But right now,
back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, thanks, Roger. All right, you're listening to the WGN Radio Theater. Just a reminder, we are here every Saturday and Sunday beginning at 11, unless we're preempted for some reason by Sox. And in the winter, we're preempted sometimes, once in a while, by
Hawks. Very rare.
Not too often, though.
Very rare.
Very rarely.
They're on the West Coast, and it's a late game.
Usually, we're here right on time, 11 p.m.
Well, I'm on time.
Yeah. And then we go off the air on Saturdays at 2 a.m., and then on Sundays, we're off the air at 1 a.m. So 5 hours of your favorite classic radio shows. And we have a text in line. We love getting your texts. It is 312-981-7200. I'm not worried about Lisa falling asleep tonight because we're only on the air an hour and a half. So generally when we're on the air 3 hours, she's out.
Yeah, I just go right under the table. If you don't see me sitting in the chair, I'm probably sleeping right under the desk, taking a little snooze with my pillow.
So far, you're up, though. I think you're going to make it. You'll make it till it's only another 22 minutes.
I think
we're off the air. All right, let's get back now to Edmund O'Brien in Suspense.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, selected from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines. Now that the vacation season is over, friends and neighbors are dropping in evenings to talk over summertime experiences. Make these pleasant reunions rich in cheerful companionship by serving delicious Roma California wines.
Yes, guests are sure to feel right at home when you offer glasses of rich Roma Sherry, Roma Port, Roma Muscatel, or Roma Tokay. These traditional Roma wines of welcome, long favorites with millions of Americans, add warmth to conversation, make every friendly occasion more enjoyable. There's a better tasting Roma wine for every occasion, for every taste. Keep an assortment on hand for everyday dining and gracious entertaining. Remember, always insist on Roma wine. That's R-O-M-A, Roma wines, America's favorite wines.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Edmund O'Brien as reporter Harry Mitchell in The Argyle Album, a play well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Oh, poor boy.
I was in the bedroom of the apartment, and Marla was bathing my forehead with a damp handkerchief. I lay quiet until things cleared up a bit.
That's it. Rest a little. That's the boy.
Marla.
Where's the album, darling?
Huh?
Where's the album?
I swear I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
You don't want me to call him again, do you,
Harry? No, please, no.
I'm in the kitchen.
Huh?
I'm supposed to help you wake up and then
call. No, don't.
But you haven't got it. Do you know where it is?
I swear, Marla, I swear. I don't even know what it is. All I know is it's tooled white leather or something.
You don't? Well, all right, here's what I know. Winter found it originally. He was in occupied Europe then. He doesn't admit it, but I think he was the leader of a looting party after an American raid. It was a sheaf of documents recording the transfer of large sums of money by certain individuals, both German and American. Big men who wanted to make sure that they'd come out right, no matter whose armies won. Winter knew that he'd found a fortune that day. Fortune in blackmail.
Well, what happened?
He kept him in a public locker in a bus station. Normally the safest place in the world.
Uh-huh.
It was in a town down here in Virginia, Argyle. On a million to one twist, he lost it. A gang of young hoodlums blew up in that section with a dynamite stick. And has been missing ever since, until Alan Pierce started hinting about it in his column and the international scandal it involved.
Mm.
So when Pierce died, you see, Winter had a right to suspect that Pierce's murderer might have the album. Naturally, the big man wanted too. Lots of people wanted badly. Including me.
Hmm? You? What for?
Resale value.
I see. Well, it's a decent motive.
I'm a decent person.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. Come here.
Oh, you're nice. You're a nice boy.
You know, I can just press my thumbs here at your windpipe and you couldn't even yell.
I thought of that.
You're not kidding me.
That's the excuse I'll give to Winter. That you took me and I couldn't yell. You get on the fire escape and I'll give you plenty of time before I call.
I don't figure what's in it for you.
We'll see each other again, won't we? You'll find it.
Huh?
Hurry.
Okay, honey. You asked for it.
Not too hard.
It was a funny experience choking a woman deliberately. I squeezed pretty hard, scuffing bruises at her throat to make it look good. I got so mixed up I didn't know what I was doing. I took her once and kissed her very hard. I rumpled her clothes a little and mussed her hair, and when she looked pretty battered, I kissed her again, and then I crawled out in the fire escape and down. I gave the cabbie the Worcester Street address from Pierce's book. It was a junkyard. Jawbride's junkyard.
Huh? What do you want?
You, Mr. Bride, Jawbride.
What's my name? What do you want?
The Argyle album.
What? How did you... I know you. You're that Mitchell guy the police want for the murder of Alan Pierce. If you move, I'll kill you.
Hey. Say, I got you figured, Brian.
Huh?
Yeah, you're the fence for all the juvenile crooks around here. Oh, some junkyard.
Well, I'm on lots better terms with the cops than you are, Mitchell.
Yeah?
And I'm phoning them right now.
Sure. One of your kids brought you a nice white leather book with a two-headed eagle on it. Maybe you stretched and gave him two bits for it. Then you found out you had something too big for a little guy. You knew it was worth dough, but your stomach wasn't tough enough for big-time blackmail. Yeah, so you figured a way to be right. Still make dough. Sell it to Alan Pierce.
What of it? Selling's no crime.
Hey, I'm really guessing, but good, huh? You invested the price of a couple of photostats in a train ticket to Washington. You got to Pierce and sold him the photostats. And then you told him he'd have to come here for the rest, huh?
Nothing to keep me from killing you right now.
No, I guess there isn't.
Sure not. You're a fugitive, aren't you? Escape killer, you they wouldn't touch me.
Wait, don't!
Oh. Don't you even say thanks when your life is saved?
Thanks. And nice shot.
Don't mention it. You wonder how I knew you were here.
Yeah, you watched me take the cab from the window and got the number. I know that one now.
Oh, you're bright as well as nice. Maybe we can play this game together now that we have the album.
Huh? Have we?
Well, it can't be far. In the desk drawer, the filing...
I think we both saw Broad move at the same time. The gun at the edge of his fingers was somehow in his hands again. It wavered weakly between Marla and me. It was like watching a slow-motion movie. Marla didn't waste time. I saw the Swede's little body jump at the impact, but his gun kept waving, and it went off. Marla sighed and fell down at my feet. She smiled at me once. That's all. I walked through three cops in the hall of the police station, getting no more reaction than a nod of greeting, and into Horslip Sampson's office.
Thanks for the phone call, Mitchell. But you gave us a bum steer. What's your angle?
Bum steer? I saw the shooting.
We found a woman. Very dead indeed. But there was no man.
Joe Bra? He didn't look alive when I saw him last.
Well, he wasn't there.
I'm only telling you.
And what do you expect us to do with you?
Book me on suspicion of murder.
The murderer who, may I ask?
Alan Pierce, naturally.
You, want to confess?
It's not bargain day today, Lieutenant.
Oh, it was just an angle.
Look, did the autopsy on Pierce come through?
I was wondering why you gave yourself up. Yeah, he died of heart failure, like he claimed. But only because he was so loaded with dope, even a normal heart would give out.
Dope? You mean poison?
No, same thing, too much medicine. And Dr. Van Selben, the one who dosed him, has disappeared, took a powder. You're not even runner-up for suspect now, Mitchell.
Heart failure. Heart failure. But then why the scalpel? Why? Whoever stuck that scalpel into Pierce wanted to create suspicious circumstances around the death so they'd be sure there'd be an autopsy.
Hey, that's an angle.
Yeah. Yeah, but how about Pinky? And how did the murderer get in and out of the room? How?
Look, Mitchell, you want to be held?
No.
Then stop asking questions I can't answer. Go on, beat it.
I still wanted to break it. I found myself nursing a deep belief that there must be equal justice for the murders of a man I loved, another I respected, and a woman I admired. Well, there was only one place I could figure out where to start. I picked my way through Joe Abrad's junkyard. Shapes of skeleton cars stood out dark in the moonlight. The far end of the yard was a lighted shack. I went up to it, almost to the door. Somebody pushed me from behind. My own body knocked the door open. Rod was propped into a chair, facing me, his eyes wide. Winter stood beside him, and Gil walked up from behind me alongside.
Oh, come in, Mitchell.
Thanks.
Well, Mr. Mitchell, this is a proper ending. Another demonstration of the ascendancy of will.
Is he alive?
Who? O'Broad here? No, not now. He was very weak and had no resistance, but we learned what we needed. He had the album quite cleverly hidden, but we have it now. Oh, yeah. You want to see it?
Thanks. Say, who hired Dr. Van Selben to kill Pierce?
A very powerful and very wealthy individual. Most concerned with retrieving the album, Mr. Mitchell.
But you didn't want it to be heart failure. You wanted to force an autopsy. That's why you stuck the scalpel into the corpse.
Yeah, that's rather clever of you, Mr. Mitchell.
And in the hospital, you were dressed as an attendant, right? Huh? You got behind that bed screen sometime earlier in the day, probably early in the morning, before Pierce woke up, right? You were willing to wait a long time for what you wanted.
It was very tough.
You hoped to find out from Pierce where he had hidden the album. You found out instead that Pierce didn't have it. But you knew that Pierce was going to die anyhow from the overdose. Oh, you decided to frame the doctor with the scalpel, forcing the autopsy. You know, there's only one conceivable reason for you to have taken all those chances.
And what, may I ask, can that conceivable reason be?
That you are the powerful and wealthy individual who got Dr. Van Selben to do Pierce's murder.
Really?
That you are no more Mr. Winter than I am. Yeah, the original Mr. Winter who smuggled the album out of Europe, you eliminated when he first tried to blackmail you and your fellow thieves.
Thieves, really?
By that line of reasoning, I was able to do a little research in the files of my reporter's memory. And in spite of the fact that you have no mustache and there are several other slightly physical changes that could be easily adjusted,
You have an amazing resemblance to the very powerful, very wealthy Mr. Gerald K. Avery.
Theory, merely theory. But isn't this indulgence in violence a strange occupation for a man like Gerald Avery?
Not at all, Mr. Avery. A man doesn't become an international power by going to Sunday school every week. You decided nobody could do your dirty work better than yourself. I suppose you felt you needed help, so you got a professional adventuress like Marla to work with you on the grounds that you yourself were an adventurer, a blackmailer. The same goes for Gil here.
Yeah, your time's run over, Mitchell.
And Pinky, yeah. Pinky, of course it doesn't bother you that you killed a nice guy with a nice family. To you, he was only in the way. You stuck the scalpel into Pierce's corpse to save yourself some more trouble. The trouble of paying off Dr. Van Selden. He'll probably show up floating. You dragged Pinky behind the screen, and you got behind with him and hid. Then when all the doctors in attendance broke into the room and rushed around Pierce's bed, you stepped out casually from behind the screen and mingled with the crowd. Ah, you were dressed for the part.
As a reporter, Mr. Mitchell, would you describe that exploit as daring or brilliant?
No. No, Mr. Avery. I'd use the words selfish, traitorous, foul.
Oh, your morality sickens me.
There's now, one more thing you didn't count on, Gil. Gil here.
Gil has nothing to do with it.
Oh, yes, he has.
You keep your mouth shut.
I'll do nothing of the sort.
Let him talk. Gil, let go of my arm.
Let him talk.
Thanks, Gil. And just keep hold of that arm.
Talk.
Okay. As I was saying, Mr. Avery, you forgot that Marla and Gil have been playing along with you because they figured you were their kind. There is a certain honor among little crooks, but not among you big-timers, Mr. Avery. Now, you have the album that couldn't hurt anybody but yourself. Who's the blackmail? Where's the payoff?
Gil's
wondering what's going to protect his interests. He knows now what happened to Dr. Van Selden. He knows. You see, he figured you for an honest crook, not a big-timer.
Gil, you're not listening. He's only playing for time. He's only trying to save his own miserable skin. I'll pay you off, Gil. I'll pay you more than you've ever dreamed.
You really are, Gerald Avery.
Don't be an idiot, Gil, now. You cooperate with me and I... Gil! My arm!
That was a bad mistake of Mr. Gerald K. Avery. You see, he figured his gun was bigger than Gil. He moved fast, but not quite fast enough. The lead hit Gil on the shoulder, but that didn't even faze him. I understand he broke Avery's arm. That's when Avery screamed. The next blow broke Avery's neck. Well, there was an awful lot of excitement because Horselip's shadows caught up with the proceedings just about this time, and the details aren't too clear. All I know is... oh, that it had been a big day. I was awfully tired. I went home, climbed in bed, and slept a long, long time. But with my head on a nice pillow made of tooled white leather.
Suspense. Presented by Roma. That's R-O-M-A. Better tasting Roma wines. America's largest selling wines. Whichever Roma California wine you choose, whether it's nut like Roma Sherry, fruity Roma Port, or any Roma wine, you can be sure of better tasting wine every time. That's because Roma selects and presses the choicest California grapes. Then, Roma Master Vintners with ancient skills and America's largest winemaking resources unhurriedly guide this luscious grape goodness to tempting perfection. Then, this wine treasure of better taste is placed with mellow Roma wines of years before to await later selection from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines for your pleasure. So, for everyday enjoyment or friendly hospitality, serve delicious Roma wine. You'll find all Roma wines delightful, inexpensive, and always better tasting. That's why more Americans enjoy Roma wines, that's R-O-M-A, Roma wines, than any other wines in the world.
Edmund O'Brien appeared through the courtesy of Universal International Pictures, now releasing Something in the Wind, starring Deanna Durbin. Tonight's suspense play was by Cyril Enfield. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Michael O'Shea as star of Suspense. Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, that is a terrific episode of Suspense with the Argyle album starring Edmund O'Brien, September 4th, 1947 on that. Also in the cast, you heard Lorene Tuttle and Truman Bradley doing the announcing along with Joseph Kearns, Hans Conried in the cast as well. Heard on CBS, sponsored by your favorite beverage,
Roma Wine.
Roma Wines. Lisa, she's a big Pabst Blue Ribbon beer drinker and Roma Wines.
You know me so well, Carl.
Yeah.